Missing Siblings. Tricia left the sheriff's office hoping to get down to Magnolia to catch Glenn during his usual Saturday morning rounds at Zeke's Cafe. As she approached her car, she noticed a man getting out of a car across the street and heading in her direction. She changed course. When the man changed course as well, she prepared to defend herself. There was something about him which spelled trouble. "Patricia Knox," the man addressed her, using her maiden name. "I'd like a minute of your time, please." He came closer. He looked familiar. "Do I know you from somewhere?" "Probably not," he admitted, "but I do have some business to discuss with you. All I need is a minute or so." She returned to her car to perch on the front fender, trying to look unconcerned. He stood on a curb a safe distance away as if he read her mind. "You came out of the sheriff's office. Were you at the sheriff's briefing about Betty Worry?" he asked. "She was mentioned, yes. I was just in for a social visit. Roy and I have been good friends for many years." Until she knew something about the man who approached her, Tricia decided to share as little information as she could with the man. "I was hoping that you could help me," he continued. "My name is Tim. Tim McFarland. I have a farm out on the western edge of the county where Betty Worry's body was found. I was wondering if there was any news." "I don't cover hot news stories, Mr. McFarland. Since you seem to know who I am, you should also know that I don't cover stories like the one involving Miss Worry." "Well, I knew that. I was just wondering if maybe you'd changed your mind, that's all." "Should I?" she asked him. "No, there's no real need." Timothy turned away to continue his walk to the sheriff's office. "You said you found her," Tricia called after him. "I thought you said you weren't interested." "I'm interested only to the point where your sister might have been involved." "My sister?" he countered. "I don't have a sister." He returned to resume his walk. "Weren't you born Timothy Brown?" He stopped. "Don't you have a sister living over in Possum Hollow?" Tricia insisted. Tim turned and gave Tricia a hard, cold stare. "My family history is no business of yours, Miss Knox. But for the record, you're right. I was born Timothy Brown. My parents were killed when I was 2, and I was lucky enough to be adopted. End of story. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a date with a lame duck sheriff." He then turned and walked briskly toward the sheriff's office, leaving her with a nut to crack. She hopped off the Mustang's fender, brushed off any imagined dirt which may have landed on her backside, then drove down to Magnolia to meet her husband. Zeke's Cafe was still humming with the usual Saturday morning social circles when Tricia arrived. It took her a few moments to spot Glenn at the family table, involved in a conversation with Philip Farmer. She recognized him from some of the billboards he rented on the outskirts of Prentice. "Farmer for Fuller, Fuller for Farmer." Glenn beckoned her over to the table. "Why don't you admit that your woman and Roy Ball have eyes for each other?" the candidate complained. "You, being from the outside, have no idea what's going on here in Fuller County." "Excuse me," Tricia interrupted. "You're saying that I have a thing for Roy Ball? What have you been smoking?" "That's the first sign that something's going on, city boy," Farmer told Glenn, ignoring Tricia. "Denial. Ha! Why was she at the sheriff's office for so long this morning if she didn't have something going on with him?" "You're fucking crazy," Glenn muttered. "Well, he's fucking your wife," Farmer shot back. The exchange caught the ear of a group from the Magnolia Community Church. They turned around to see Tricia signal Glenn that she was going upstairs while she still could. "Sorry, ladies," Glenn apologized. "You're about to cross a line, Mr. Farmer," Glenn told the candidate. "No one is allowed to participate in electioneering in my place of business. Zeke never allowed it, and I won't either." While Glenn wound up his rebuke of Philip Farmer, Tricia slipped quietly to the back and up the stairway to the office they shared at the radio station on the second floor. Glenn joined her a few minutes later. "I thought Esther Roll was going to have an apoplectic fit down there," Glenn laughed. "I suspect we'll hear from Dan Stevens asking about the incident." "Well, I imagine the exchange will be viral, at least here in Magnolia, by the end of the day," she told him. Changing the subject, she said, "Don't you find it odd that Philip Farmer knew that I was at Roy Ball's office just now?" "He seems to have ways of knowing, I guess," Glenn opined. "Did you find out anything from Roy about the woman you encountered yesterday when you went to see him?" "I learned a little more. He called her Crazy Sally and told me what others had said about her family. I also had an encounter on my way back out to the car with someone named Timothy McFarland. He claimed to be a man who found Betty Horry's body out at his farm. Oh, and by the way, Timothy is Sally Brown's brother." "Interesting," Glenn observed. "Did Roy tell you anything about the Horry girl other than what Gene had on his morning newscast?" "Well, there are a few things that Roy told me which he didn't tell Gene or the other reporters. For instance, he seemed to think there were signs that Betty Horry had been pressed into being a prostitute. I'm beginning to believe that the same thing could have happened to Sally had it not been for the disappearance. At least that's what I think Lizzie Elston was hinting yesterday." "There could be some merit to that argument," Glenn agreed. "I've heard stories about how families who struggle to make ends meet will sometimes come into money at about the same time a family member disappears. Of course, most of those stories are nothing more than hearsay." "According to Miss Lizzie, Sally may have been sold either as a child bride or to work as a prostitute to help the family. According to Roy, that's been happening here off and on for a number of years. The practice went underground at about the same time Sally's parents disappeared and has only recently resurfaced." "Now that's interesting," Glenn commented. "Are you up for a road trip?" "What do you have in mind?" "Let's say let's find Sally Brown and find out what she has to say." "I was about to suggest the same thing," she smiled. "You know the great minds run on the same channel." "Idiots think alike," Glenn reminded her. The Smokehouse. After spending a couple of hours doing some footwork on the internet, Trisha and Glenn headed out to Possum Hollow. It took Glenn about 45 minutes to drive there, taking the scenic route through Pearl and making a quick stop at the cemetery to inspect the grave markers Trisha mentioned seeing the previous day before heading down to Possum Hollow. "This should be the place," he declared, pointing out a small home situated roughly 200 feet off the road. "That should be it, all right," Trisha agreed. They drove up a rutted gravel and dirt driveway, which extended next to a small house, which looked as if it were in dire need of some tender, loving care. Parked next to the house were an old GMC pickup truck and a tired old Chevy station wagon. Glenn managed to park his car in such a way that he could beat a hasty retreat if necessary. Immediately after getting out of the car, they felt as if they were being followed by at least one pair of watchful eyes while approaching the front door. "If you're government of church folk, you ain't welcome," a male voice on the other side of the front door informed the visitors before they had a chance to knock. "We're neither," Trisha told the door. "We own the radio station of Magnolia, and we'd like to talk with Sally Brown if she happens to live here." There was silence from the other side of the door. "We have some questions about her family, about what happened back here in 67, Trisha continued. Again, silence. "It'll only take a few minutes." The door opened just enough for Trisha to make out part of a man's face. "Get the fuck out before I decide to start shooting," the man growled. "We're not here to judge," she announced. "We're here to wrap up a loose end or two, that's all. I'm giving you to the count of three." "No need," Glenn said. "We're on our way." Glenn touched Trisha lightly on the elbow and pointed her toward the car. They stepped briskly, hoping not to catch a bullet or a load of buckshot in the back. Halfway between the front door of the house and their car, they heard a female voice. "You the woman who was up the cemetery yesterday?" They stopped and turned to see a woman in an old house dress and a pair of slippers coming out the front door heading toward them. "Hello, Sally," Trisha said softly. "Yes. I brought my husband with me. Can we talk?" "Earl, I trust him. This one was up to the graveyard yesterday for a while," Sally said, pointing to Trisha. "Put up your gun while I invite these nice people inside to show them some hospitality." Neither Glenn nor Tricia was prepared for the experience of being in the Brown household. The first thing that they noticed was a pall of cigarette smoke. It seemed to permeate every corner of what they supposed was the living room just inside the front door. Earl eyed them warily while he put his rifle back into what appeared to be an umbrella stand. He took a long drag from the cigarette he was smoking, then placed the butt in an overflowing ashtray next to an old recliner. "Smoke?" Sally offered. She was in the process of rolling out a fresh cigarette for herself. "No thanks," Tricia smiled. "Oh, that's right. You said you never did know how." Sally lit her cigarette off the one she had apparently just laid down. She then went in what Glenn and Tricia supposed was a kitchen, brought out a pair of rickety old chairs, and invited her guests to sit down. Glenn sat. Tricia elected to stand behind him. "What exactly brung you up here today?" Sally asked once everyone was settled. "We had some questions. I have some questions about you and your family," Tricia began. "We've heard some stories about you after asking around, and I understand you had some siblings other than David and the other one buried up at the top of the hollow."
"I had what?"
"Siblings. Brothers and sisters," Tricia clarified.
You mean kin, right?"
"I mean kin, right." Sally looked over to Earl. He seemed to be keeping a close watch on her.
"They was seven of us."
She looked over at Earl again. He seemed to nod his head in approval.
"They was me and Francis and Rose. Then they was David Jr., Evan, and Timmy."
She looked over at Earl again, then rolled another cigarette in anticipation of the end of the one she was currently smoking.
"Do you know what happened to them?" Tricia asked, looking at her. She could see a family resemblance between Sally and Tim McFarland.
Junior's in jail. It were in all the papers."
She finished rolling her next cigarette.
"Evan killed himself. It were in the papers, too. Paper said it was sudden, but everyone knew he killed himself. Francis run away. Sheriff would bring her back, and she'd run again. She finally run to somewhere where she couldn't be found."
The cigarette Sally had been smoking nearly burned her fingers when she transferred the fire to the cigarette she just rolled.
"Rose and Timmy, they was the youngest. They got adopted. Never heard from them after they left home."
"Do you know who adopted Tim?"
Tricia anticipated Sally's answer.
"Some family named McFarland adopted him. Never had a boy of their own, so I heard. They said to have lived out in the western part of the county over towards Jumpstart. Can't say if he's alive or dead."
Tricia wondered if she should tell Sally about her encounter with Tim McFarland earlier that morning, thinking better of doing so for the time being.
Tricia told me that she met your brother Tim earlier this morning, didn't you?"
Glenn ruined her plans.
"He was apparently just passing through. He didn't say too much," Tricia quickly added, trying to cover the faux pas.
"Well, you said that he did mention that he thought he had family in the area and he might try to seek out the old homestead," Glenn offered.
"I honestly thought he would have gotten here before we did, sir."
Tricia squeezed her husband to let him know that he was out of order. Hopefully he would pick up on the clue. Sally smiled at Tricia's last comment.
"You wouldn't ask him where he might be living, have you?"
"I thought he heard him say something about West Virginia somewhere. Elkins, maybe," Glenn replied.
"It was Elkins, Glenn," he said to look him up when he came through the next summer on the way to Canaan. Tricia squeezed his shoulder again to let him know that he had said quite enough.
"I had no idea he moved."
Sally's next cigarette had almost gone out. She put it back in her mouth to bring the fire back to life while she rolled another to take its place.
"He might still be living here in Fuller County for all I know," Sally sighed, plume of smoke rolling from her mouth. "He only pretends to live somewhere else, I bet, so he doesn't have to claim us. David died in that car wreck and Evan did himself in, like found out the other day. Me, Francis, and Rose are left, though Francis and Rose never call or write or nothing. They may as well be dead, too."
Sally
took one more drag off her cigarette before using it to light the one she had just rolled. She then extinguished the old cigarette and added the butt to the overflowing ashtray. "It's no wonder those women don't want to come here after what your daddy did," Earl butted in. "He killed your mama and left y'all to fend for yourselves, he did." "Did not," Sally insisted. "They done disappeared, vanished off the face of the earth in the twinkling of an eye." "Bullshit, woman, I keep telling you. Your mama's most likely a pile of bones deep in the woods somewhere, and your daddy's somewhere laughing his ass off or getting by with doing her in. Granger knows." Earl turned away from the blaring television set to look directly at Glenn. "You go have a talk with Fred Granger. You'll most likely find him in his barn this time of a Saturday. Him and his wife have the place down to the foot of the hollow where Possum Hollow Roads meets the highway. He remembers everything, including what really happened back here in 67. Sally rolled another cigarette while looking balefully at the faded picture in front of her on the coffee table. "That Fred Granger ain't no stranger to a lie, Earl. He lied then, you know. Told me all sort of things and took away my innocence. Fred Granger's going to hell. Mark my words, going to hell." Sally stalked out of the room, pausing only long enough to light the cigarette she had just rolled. Moments later, she was heard going out the back door. Tricia turned to follow her out the house. "May as well stay put," Earl advised. "She's off for a while, up Reed's Trail, at least up to the lower road." "You mean Rattlesnake Ridge?" Tricia asked. "No," he answered. "It's a path running parallel to the ridge. Runs from Paul Rhodes's back three lots up the holler over across to Pearl Road near Sharp's place. Used to be where the moonshiners hid their stills. There's things growing up there which people don't want found these days, at least by the law. Russell's men are said to be hid up there somewheres, at least that's what everyone says." "Russell's men?" Tricia asked. "Quentin Russell's men," Earl confirmed. "Sally goes up there every once in a while to see if she can find one of them to bring him to justice. Her daddy was one of them back in the day, you know. Him and Quentin Russell were best friends. That is, until the day Quentin come to their front door and killed Sally's ma. She won't admit it, but her daddy most likely had a hand in the killing. They's a warrant out for his arrest down to the courthouse." "Do you think that Jim Brown is still alive?" Tricia asked. "He'd be damn near 90 if he was," Earl replied. "And if you want to know the truth, I think Quentin Russell's alive, too. Two of them most likely up to no good, meaning they's behind some of the disappearing that's going on today."